It's a freedom machine like no other, starting, growing, and cashing out of your own business.
Then all hell breaks loose.
Burned out, carrying all the weight on your shoulders, fighting fire after fire, never getting a break. But that was so yesterday.
It's time for your business breakthrough. Break out of the bottleneck. Break through to new levels of success. Break into a life you love. Now from Park Avenue in New York City, here's attorney, strategist, and SBA small business champion, Nina Kaufman. This is the Business Breakthrough Podcast.
Hello, how are you? Welcome to Business Breakthrough. I'm your host, Nina Kaufman, coming to you from the heart of New York City, and I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for tuning in. In this episode, we're going to chat with David Schreiner Kahn. He's the president of Tend Strategic Partners, a consulting firm based in New York, and we're going to chat about strategic solutions to get unstuck and on the way to scaling. So stay tuned, because we're going to get to that in a minute. Now, I don't know if you've seen maybe some of the memes that are out there, this myth of the pioneering entrepreneur who built a brilliant company with her own blood, sweat, and tears and did it all by herself. Well, you know what? That's hogwash. I don't even know a single business owner, historically or currently, who has sat away, squirreled away in his or her own little dark room and single-handedly, without an ounce of financing or mental input or creative input from anyone else, built a great and brilliant company. And it's hard to do on your own. You know that. Entrepreneurship is not an easy route. It's hard to do on your own, isn't it? It helps to have other minds to help you focus, to stay resilient, and to get past whatever fears or mental roadblocks may be in your way. And that's something, you know, we touch on in our special report, 10 Steps to a $1 Million Business, when we talk about the importance of a brain trust, the importance of having other minds, other ideas to help you shape and hone and question your assumptions. So how can you form one for your business? Go to businessexponential.com/podreport to find out. And as I discuss with this week's guest, you know, if you've been in business for any length of time, it's easy to get stuck. I think there are a few reasons for that. First is that it's lonely at the top. There's a lot of negative crap we're dealing with. Either you've got naysayers harping at your business saying, family members around the table, I thought you'd be further along by now. That kind of garbage. Have you ever heard that one? Yeah, I have. So you just sit there and smile and don't stick the steak knife into them. You're also dealing with customer complaints. You have your own Greek chorus in your head of, you know, delays reaching ROI and what's the matter and why aren't things going well. So there are a lot of stresses that you as the business owner are dealing with that just may not be shared with others on your team. Another reason is that it's hard to see when we're in the middle of things and emotionally invested in how things get done. Warren Buffett has an expression, the chains of habit are too light to be felt until they are too heavy to be broken. And that was really kicking around in my head this week because as I've been making a shift from contact management using the Infusionsoft program, I've been using Outlook for, 10 plus years. And it wasn't a great system, but, you know, I kind of jerry-rigged it to work, kind of, sort of, in a way. Maybe not optimally, but good enough to amble by. But now I need to rethink and question assumptions all about how I'm keeping in touch with people and who are truly the high-value contacts that I need to stay in contact with. So I've got to let go of a system, even if it wasn't so great, that, you know what, I got into a comfort level and I got used to using it for over a decade. And a third reason and way it's easy to get stuck is that we don't often know what a better way is. Maybe we haven't seen it by or learned it by example or quite know how to create what we want. And maybe some of those things within your business are instead of the, oh my God, we're always in crisis and we're always putting out fires and things are always hectic, to create more of a solution-oriented culture where you're able to take glitches and mistakes a little more in stride and learn from them more effectively so that your staff is learning, you're having better communication with your customers, and overall your business is moving forward. And that's why it's so important to have the help of others to share the strategic insights that they've learned from their experience, but maybe we haven't gotten from ours. And it's why I'm looking forward to talking with our guests this week. So a little bit about David Schreiner Kahn. He is a recognized authority on leadership and management capabilities, all leading toward organizational excellence. As the president of Tend Strategic Partners, and he's host of the business podcast Smashing the Plateau, on which I was a guest, David empowers organizations to become the recognized go-to resource in their niche. And part of how he does that is tapping into some of the blueprints that can help you overcome emotional and tactical roadblocks so that you can create the innovation you need in your business to thrive. David's had a widespread experience in the C-suite as a CEO, COO, and CFO in the not-for-profit sector, project manager in the private sector. He's got bachelor's and master's degrees in chemical engineering. Go figure. And he was a Fulbright scholar in Israel at the Technion Institute. So we're delighted to have him here on Business Breakthrough. Hi, David. Thanks so much for being with us today.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Nina.
You're very welcome. And one of the things I wanted to chat with you about is very often business owners think, you know, they build a business and they get stuck. And they sometimes think of it as a process issue. I don't have the right staff, or I'm not onboarding my clients properly. But you have an interesting perspective in that you see that there are emotional roadblocks that cause business owners to get stuck. Can you talk a little bit about what those emotional roadblocks are?
Sure. And actually, I find that the emotional roadblocks are very much tied into the tactical roadblocks. Right. And it sort of goes back and forth. So if you think about the fact that anybody who is in a leadership role, whether it's in a, you know, big corporate setting, sports team, or religious organization, politics, government, small business, business owner, it's a very lonely role, a very lonely position. It's lonely at the top. People say it's lonely at the top, and it is, because what happens is you get fed all kinds of information from all kinds of people. Lots of it is negative information. It's like, I can't tell you how many people who spent a few decades in corporate life and decided they wanted to do something entrepreneurial. A very common piece of advice they hear from people is, well, what are you going to do about health insurance? Right?
As if that's the only issue in starting a business.
Exactly. It's like, you know, you can buy health insurance. you know, I also host a podcast, and I hear this over and over again from my podcast guests, from clients, from just people I know, which is that there's all sorts of negative advice that we get all the time, much of it unsolicited. And sometimes it is solicited. So when you hear that advice, your mind starts playing with it. Like, you know, what can go wrong? And there are a lot of risks in running a business. It's not all glory and it's not all opportunities. And anybody who has done something entrepreneurial knows that it's really hard work and lots of things can go wrong and lots of things do go wrong. So when you hear all this stuff, your mind starts playing with it, and it plays particularly on your fears. And those fears often will keep you from getting started on something that's really important. So the first emotional roadblock is the fear of getting started. And then once you actually do get started, you know, they say that plan A is rarely the one that comes to fruition. And there's a reason why that's a common saying, because you know what you know and you know what you don't know. And that's part of your plan. It's like, I can plan to deal with what I know, and then there are pieces that I know I don't know. So I have to figure out how to solve that. And whether it's a matter of gaining new knowledge or whether it's hiring a team member or outsourcing something, there's some way to try to solve what I know that's missing. And then what happens is something else, right? So it's like launch a product in a new market, and one of the things you think about is people may buy it or people may not buy it. What you don't think about is that somebody may come back to you and tell you, you know, I'm not sure that I need this product just the way you've designed it, but there is something else that I need. And then that could present a new opportunity.
Right.
Or, right, you could have a great plan to launch something and people have told you they want it, and you launch it and you talk to them, and then they're not making a decision to buy it. And it's taking you longer and longer than you think to actually bring in some revenue. And then what do? Do you invest more money, or do you stop, or do you try something different? That wasn't part of your plan. Your plan wasn't to wait 9 months to gain a sale when you thought you were going to gain a sale in 6 weeks. So the unexpected happens, and then the unexpected starts to play on your fears, and your frustrations. I put so much time and money into this. I've gotten great advice from all kinds of people. I thought I had the right solution, but things aren't working out as I planned. Sometimes there are personal things that come into play, like, it could be an illness or a death in the family that impacts your personal life, and you're not able to put the same kind of time and effort or the same kind of focus into something that you thought. Or you hired a great person, or actually this happened to me recently. I was in a project that had some partners, and one of the partners suddenly bailed with no warning, right? So what you don't expect that. What do you do, right? There's a gaping hole. There's a skill set that's missing. So what's plan B? Plan B could be find another partner with the same skill set, which may or may not be so easy. It could be to invest some money that the rest of the partners are going to kick in because we're going to hire somebody rather than have an equity partner for the other piece. Right? All these things happen. Then, of course, the fears play in. Well, maybe nobody really wants this product we're developing anyway, so maybe we shouldn't spend our time on it. Maybe we shouldn't look for another partner. Maybe we shouldn't invest more money in it. Right. And it goes on and on and on like that. So the fear is a big thing. And then the frustration when stuff doesn't go right plays on that.
Right. And so to avoid being lonely at the top, as you say, there you get so much information. How do you determine, especially when it's an area that you may not know well or you're dealing with the unexpected, how do you sift through it so that you know or at least have some confidence for making a decision that's going to lead to your business growth and ultimately to your scale?
Well, that's where help can be really valuable. And having a good set of mentors or advisors can be really beneficial. You know, you should always have people in your life who can help provide some guidance. For example, in my podcast, I ask guests about their influencers. And one of the resources that your listeners might find valuable is to just see the kinds of influencers that we list on our blog along with the podcast guests.
Right.
Right. There's no cost to that. You can go on and see. But mentors, advisors, being in groups with like-minded people, right? So if you're a business owner, being in a group that meets regularly of other business owners dealing with similar kinds of issues, particularly if they're business owners that are not direct competitors, in an atmosphere that is safe and comfortable where you will feel like there's trust in the room and you can open up and share some of your concerns with others, and they'll share their fears and their concerns with you and you can help them. There are lots of these kinds of groups. Some of them are in person. Nowadays, some of them are online. You could have an accountability buddy, somebody you meet with regularly who might have some similar issues. And again, that could be in person. It could be online. And particularly if you try to be structured about these kinds of encounters. So if you have an accountability buddy, have a set time to meet with that person, whether it's once a week or once a month or whatever it is, have a set time so you do it regularly and have a kind of a framework, an agenda where you help the other person part of the time and that person helps you part of the time. There's some give and take.
Yeah, and that's a great idea. And just to point out that those influencers are available on your blog at smashingtheplateau.com. So wanted people to be able to know about that. I heard a speaker today who spoke on the topic, leaders aren't afraid of failure. So to go back to your earlier point about fears, how can leaders become more comfortable, especially in the world of entrepreneurship, with the idea that you may fail and fail repeatedly, but that is a valuable part of the business growth and scale process?
Right. It's if you think about little kids when they're first learning how to walk, they fall down a lot. Right. And their bodies are actually pretty resilient. Their bodies are soft. They're close to the ground. Most of the time, they don't get hurt too badly. But that process of falling down enables them to learn how to walk better. And then it enables them to learn how to run. Functioning in the world of business and life is the same way. We all make mistakes. And the thing about mistakes is to realize that if you look at them as learning opportunities, and what can you do differently? What can you learn from the mistakes and do differently the next time, so that if you're faced with a similar situation, you will do better the second time? Then I think you won't be so afraid of it. The other thing to keep in mind, and this is also really important for people who are business owners or in leadership roles, is you need to think about your employees the same way. Employees will also make mistakes.
Yes.
And you want to create a culture that is a solution-oriented culture where people are encouraged to take risks that are within reason, and you can provide some guidance as to what risks as the supervisor or the manager or the business leader you're comfortable having them make. But be okay that they're going to make some mistakes, provided that they learn from the mistakes and don't repeat the same mistakes over and over again. If you have an employee that's making the same mistake over and over and over again and not learning from it, that's a different story. But if a person makes a mistake based on some reasonable assumptions about what the outcome was going to be, but it didn't quite work out that way, and yes, it may have cost the company some money, but particularly if it's not the kind of cost that's going to put the company out of business or really set things back tremendously, if the employee learns from that process about what to do next time and becomes smarter and more adept and does better the next time, that will help your company. Right. So if you're constantly criticizing employees for mistakes, you're not going to do better. You'll do worse over time, and employees mm-hmm. will get frustrated and they'll want to leave.
Okay. Can you give an example of either within your business or clients that you've worked with, just so we can see how that plays out, the kind of leeway you give in decision making? How do you know how much to give? Or just share with us an example of how that did work out and work out well.
Let's say you're a business owner and you have somebody who is a manager of a project. And I've dealt with this with a client where the manager was the person who was responsible for interacting with the customer on a day-to-day basis and may not have fulfilled the customer's expectations at a high enough level for the customer to want to come back and do repeat business.
Mm-hmm.
If the business owner gets a complaint from the customer about the performance of the manager and the workers on that job, then the business owner has two options. One is to give the manager less responsibility in the future because the business owner is afraid the manager is going to annoy another customer and lose another customer.
Mm-hmm.
Or the business owner can say to the manager, here's what happened. What did you learn from this? What do you think we should do differently the next time? And give that manager a second chance with another customer, right? So let's say the example is the customer wanted the workers to finish a paint job by a certain date. And the manager sent the workers to a different job because he thought the other job needed the work more, but didn't communicate with the customer that they weren't going to be able to deliver by the expected date,
okay.
Right? So that communication gap with the customer has caused a gap in between what the customer expected and what actually got delivered. And maybe that delivery date for the customer was really critically important to the customer, or maybe it wasn't so critically important. But without communicating the change in the delivery date, the customer was bound to be disappointed.
Sure.
Right. And it could be that the other customer that got the workers didn't need his or her job done by a certain date. Right. Mm-hmm. So you've got to manage the communication, manage the customer expectations. It's a complicated process for somebody who's in a management role. But, you know, sometimes they're really good at it and sometimes they're not. And the question is, if that lack of communication is causing a problem, if I'm a manager, what do I learn from that experience? And how do I do something differently the next time? Maybe the next time I'll think, okay, I need to make sure that I check in with my customers about delivery dates when there's slippage and see where there's more play to move my workers around so I'm gaining the highest amount of customer satisfaction. That's a learning process.
Mm-hmm. And I like what you said about giving the manager an opportunity with a second client, because it's very much like, I remember the expression, get back on the horse. And I remember seeing a kid, it was actually in summer camp, and someone was on a trampoline and she fell in a way that her leg got stuck in between the springs, and they had her get right back onto that trampoline to get over the fear and the nervousness and to feel comfortable getting back into the swing of that movement. Just as I can see a manager starting to become really nervous and doing a lot more second guessing than necessary when it comes to that next customer.
Yes, yes. And these communication issues are really common in companies. We have all these ways of communicating, and sometimes it makes it more complicated.
In your experience, what are some of the business structures that owners can put into place to either anticipate the unknown or have a constructive feedback loop so that as the unknown arises, you're starting to develop a database of how to handle these situations?
One way is to have a regular check-in meeting with the decision makers that are involved in any activity, any project. And I'm a firm believer that you shouldn't spend more time than is necessary in meetings. On the other hand, if you don't have meetings at all, that tends to foster gaps in communication. Because there's certain kinds of critical pieces of information that work best when you're having a dialogue. You know, so as an example, if you look at, you know, like going back to this example of a construction business, when you're mobilizing your people to start a job, you want to make sure everybody's on the same page. So just a quick check-in where everybody can ask questions to make sure they have all the ducks lined up, all the materials ready, all of the paperwork is the permits and everything are all ready. The labor is ready. Everybody's clear on the deliverable dates, et cetera. It doesn't have to take long, but the fact that you have that check-in meeting before you start is really important. And then, you know, as you're going through the work, you should have periodic check-in meetings again to make sure that everybody's on track. When issues come up that are unexpected, like, oh, I opened up the wall and I discovered that there is electrical wiring in that wall that needs some work that we didn't anticipate. What do we do? That's going to impact the next piece of work down the line. We may have to call in an electrician where we didn't think we had to. Everybody has to shift things around a little bit. And a quick conversation can alleviate a lot of problems. Right. And there are certain things you should ask when you're having check-in meetings. Make sure that everybody's clear on what they need to do between now and the next check-in meeting. When you're reviewing what happened since the last check-in meeting, make sure you go over what worked and what didn't work. In particular, understand as you are working on a task, why you're doing it, what the objective is, what the milestones are, and most importantly, what is it you need to measure to see how successful you will be. Right. And success is a scale. It's not an absolute. You can be more successful and you can be less successful. And there are things you can measure that will tell you how successful you are. As an example, if you're undergoing a marketing effort and you're trying to create awareness, well, one of the ways you might create awareness is by having conversations with key people. Who are those key people? How many do you need to have? Set up a schedule for how many conversations you need to have. Then look back over a period of time. Let's say you're checking in once a week. How many conversations did I have this past week? How would I rate the conversations? Were they with the right people? On a scale of 1 to 5, if 5 is the best contact to have that conversation, the best center of influence, as an example, was that person a 5? Was it a 3? How many 3s did I have this week? How many 4s did I have this week? How many 5s did I have this week? What were the outcomes? What did I learn? As I go through the process the next week, maybe I don't need to have as many conversations because of what I learned the previous week. So just make sure you have notes, you have a plan, you have metrics, you have things that you're going to look at. Financial metrics are not the only ones. There are lots of other metrics that are important in business.
And it sounds like consistency is really important. And from what you've seen, how often do CEOs actually take consistent action?
Some are really good at it. And I would say that the ones who are the most successful, sort of interesting. People who are entrepreneurs are often very reluctant to, sort of averse to structure. They like the idea that they're in control and there's this sort of freewheeling concept of how you go through life, as opposed to an employee where often the time that the employee works is structured by somebody else. What project the employee works on is assigned by somebody else, right? And the entrepreneur is in charge of himself or herself. So it seems like you have all this freedom. But in actual fact, what I find, people who are the most successful, although they have control over the decisions they make about the use of their time, they're very structured in how they use their time. So they will often have a routine where they will start the day, and it's often very early, often earlier than most other people. They'll have a routine that gets them started in the beginning of the day, gets them mobilized, gets their mind and their body ready for action. They'll often have an exercise routine that sort of gets them physically ready for the day. They'll have a mental routine where they'll often, they might do some meditation, or they might do something that will kind of get the right frame of mind before they start their day. They might decide that they have a couple of key things they need to do in that day that will really drive success. And they will, if interruptions come in, they will have a way of tabling interruptions to a different time so they can make sure they get the focused work on what's important done. That requires a lot of structure to do that.
And that is a great point, because very often I know there is that tension between creativity and, as you say, systems or structures. And the two are not necessarily antithetical. Sometimes it is, in fact, having the structure that allows you to be more creative within the time and the space that you have, because you don't have unlimited options. But you're very clear about what it is you want to achieve.
Sure. So if you look at somebody who's in a creative profession, as an example, like a writer, they will often have their set time and set place to do their writing, where they know they can focus best and produce the greatest work if they have that time and place to work on it.
And one thing I wanted to step back to, you were talking about the importance, for example, of check-in meetings and regular check-in and communication. What is it that CEOs or business leaders can do to really make sure they are setting structures and processes in their business where results are actually achievable and realistic, instead of having their employees do forced marches up a crazy hill?
It's very simple, but it is structured. So what you need to do is think about, going back to what I was talking about earlier, what is your objective? Why is this task important? What resources do I have? What resources do I need? In particular, think about your human resources, whether it's people who are in-house or who are outsourced. What resources do you need? What do I need to communicate to them so they know what is expected of them? What tools do they need to be able to do the job as effectively as possible? And then, as you're checking in with them, what information do you need to communicate to whom, and what information needs to be communicated to you and by whom, and how can that best be communicated? Because, we have so many methods of communication. And what's the frequency for that communication so that it is optimized? There's not too much and not too little.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you're checking in, look at, again, what it is you're measuring to see how successful you are, to whom those metrics need to be communicated, and how often. And then as you're reviewing what has been done, what have you learned, and what do you need to change for the next step? So that the next step is more successful than the last step, even if you don't change any of the players.
And to kind of come full circle and as we wrap, can you identify what are some of the fears that business leaders bring to communicating? As you said, they may not communicate effectively or frequently enough. What are some of those blocks and why are they there?
They may be afraid of the reaction they're going to get from those who are receiving the communication, whether it's employees or customers or investors or suppliers, vendors, contractors. Generally, when you're afraid of the reaction you're going to get, the longer you wait to communicate the information, the worse the reaction will be.
Right.
right? So I just finished reading the book Fierce Conversations by Susan Scott, which talks about the fact that business is built kind of one relationship at a time, and a relationship is built one conversation at a time. So think about what you need to communicate one conversation at a time, and I would say from my experience, most people under-communicate. They don't over-communicate. There are a few that will over-communicate, but most of the time, the mistakes that happen in business are because of under-communication. People don't have the tools and the resources they need to be successful in their work. You know, it's pretty basic. Employees have to guess things they should know because, you know, somebody should have told them that. Mm-hmm. That's a really common one. There are gaps between customer expectations and what actually gets delivered in terms of the promise from the seller because of gaps in communication. So think about what you need to say or write to whom, when, how often, and just make sure you do it. So yeah, there are lots of fears about it. You're afraid of the reaction, but you're better off just to do it. And you could, if you're afraid of the reaction, you could also break it down into smaller bits. So because anything that is big might seem overwhelming, but when you break it down into smaller components, you lessen what might go wrong.
Yes, and it also gives you an earlier opportunity to reset expectations if those need to be changed with a customer or an employee. And you are certainly reminding us that for business leaders, playing ostrich is for the birds. So
yeah, pretty much.
Don't stick your head in the sand when it comes to that and overcome the fears. Well, David, thank you so much for being with us and for sharing your insights on those emotional roadblocks, avoiding being lonely at the top, and what we can do to have a business breakthrough by anticipating the unknown and creating a really solid team around us. So thanks for being here.
Thank you, Nina. It's been a pleasure.
And thanks to you for tuning in today. You know, I really want you to have a breakthrough in your business as well. So as a loyal listener, I want to give you free access to one of my special video trainings that I call Ignite. In this Ignite webinar, I share my quick growth scale formula that lets you bust through the plateau, design a self-sustaining business, and live the life you deserve. You can get free access by going to businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Again, that's businessexponential.com/BBIgnite. Go there now, and we'll see you on the next episode of Business Breakthrough.